Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Kathleen Merrigan, Deputy Secretary at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Kathleen, foodborne illness is recognized as a significant public health problem in the U.S. According to the CDC, I understand 48 million people, or one out of every six Americans, get sick. 128,000 are hospitalized and 3,000 die each year. How is USDA working to ensure the safety of the U.S. food supply, and what initiatives are being pursued to improve it?
Well, you're right. You've put out some pretty stark numbers. 3,000 people dying is just not acceptable. And this president, right at the beginning of the administration, established a food safety working group coordinated, coordinating all of the federal departments that have food safety equities, chaired by my boss, Tom Vilsack, and Secretary Kathleen Sebelius. And there have been a number of things that have been outgrowths there. Basically, food safety is divided between the Food and Drug Administration and USDA. We do meat and poultry. They do everything else, with the exception of eggs. We both do eggs. We do processed eggs, liquid eggs, those kind of things. And FDA does shell eggs. Are you confused? We also grade eggs, but that has nothing to do with food safety. So when you go in the supermarket, it says grade A eggs. Those are people in our marketing division, not in our food safety division. So one of the things that the food safety working group is trying to do is at least get people to understand how all of this works and question whether it all works as well as it could. We have things that we can do better, and we're working on a number of rule changes around our plants and how we do our business. Food safety, we had a major food safety bill that passed the Congress, but that's really focused primarily on FDA. But that's causing us a lot of work because it has a major impact on our farmers and ranchers, and so we're engaged with them and making sure they understand all of our equities. We have programs that incent wildlife. So in my conservation portfolio, I'm trying to pay farmers, cost share different things that they can do on their farm to attract wildlife. And in the FDA, they're like, what? We're trying to get rid of wildlife. I'm overstating. But you know what I mean? That the wildlife being in the farm creates additional challenges in food safety. So just sort of understanding how all of these programs marry up is really a phenomenal a job. But there's stuff that the federal government does in food safety, yes, and we can do it better. But a whole lot of food safety also is what a consumer does with that food when he or she buys it at the store, how it's transported, how they deal with it in their own kitchen. And so one of the things that we've done this past year is we worked with the Ad Council, and we have a series of very, very clever, very hip ads on food safety that are just being launched now, trying to wake up the American consumer on issues around the temperature you cook your meat and poultry to, how you use cutting boards, washing plates and hands in between your produce and your meats. That sort of thing, I think, will also make a huge difference.
Right. So protecting the country's water supply is critical. It's the most critical environmental challenge of the 21st century. Would you elaborate on the role of farmers, ranchers, and landowners in protecting and enhancing water resources? And more particularly, what is USDA doing to make this an important challenge?
People might be surprised to know that 70% of land in the lower 48 is in private hands. And a lot of that land is in rural America and in the hands of farmers and ranchers. And so it's very important that we work with these folk on these private working lands to make sure that they're doing the best they can do in terms of our conservation goals. And so we have a number of programs that USDA where we cost share with farmers to have them do certain things that might be a buffer by a stream, so that prevents nutrient runoff, and we'll cost share that practice. Maybe putting up a fence to keep livestock out of that stream, we might cost share that practice. So we have a lot of different things that we're doing there to help. Our forests, our farms, our ranches, about 87% of the water that we drink is interacting with farms, forests at some point along the way. So it's so critical that we get it right And that's why these conservation programs that we have, that USDA runs, is they're so important.
So switching gears a bit away from the programming area and more to the organizational area, given the significant fiscal and economic pressures that we're under, leadership in your organization has embarked on wide cost-cutting efforts. Would you tell us more about these efforts and how you're trying to realize savings?
We have been doing a lot of things. One of our big focal areas has been IT. I think we'll be the first in the federal family to have a one email system. We have a huge amount of our work already up in the cloud. So there's been a lot of effort there. I have a great OCIO in the House, Chris Smith, and his team doing fantastic work. As great as they're doing, there's still challenges. One of the things that we were recently talking about is something like we have 800 plus wireless contracts at USDA. And they're all different and different deals. And so there's just when you have a bureaucracy with 19 agencies and all different siloed approaches to IT and a number of things, it's very difficult to get a handle on it and reform it. But we are doing that. We have really focused on increasing the contracting with small businesses. USDA is in, if not the top, it's in the top three of the federal government in terms of vending with small businesses and working to get small farmers, too, involved in food procurement. So that's a big initiative that the White House has been pushing that we've really focused in on. Does it save money? Well, it doesn't necessarily save money, but it's using our money in a way that has great meaning in society. We're really focused on trying to improve improper payments. Maybe that sounds funny to say improve improper, but improper payments is a problem across federal government. And with our Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the SNAP program, with our school meals programs, we can always do better. We've had some management reforms in that area where we're connecting people's eligibility for one thing with another thing, so we don't have to burden people with so much paperwork, which also increases the potential for error. We have really challenged all our agencies to reduce travel costs, putting in a video conferencing capacity, making sure a new computer has Skype ability. Mm. That's been very important. But even so, we've asked all agencies to cut back on their travel by about 20%. And we keep track of that every month. We get new data in, the secretary and I look at that. So there's all kinds of things going on, but we have just scratched the surface. And clearly, in these next couple of years, it's going to be pretty challenging. And we have asked all hands on deck approach for everyone to offer up their ideas. We're looking at all kinds of things right now. It's preliminary, so I'm really not ready to say. But one of the things that we found in trying to figure out where our money is going, where are we in any particular day in the month in terms of our outlays, is that with 19 agencies, again, we have a lot of different accounting systems, and it's kind of hard to crunch the numbers. So that's something that we're working on, trying to get more consistency. The way we do contracting is also fairly inconsistent around the department. We're really working on that. We've really been focusing on everyone pitching in with their ideas. Now, the president set up this SAVE Award, mm-hmm. where people are supposed to come up with an idea. How do you save money? A Forest Service employee was one of the finalists there. Her idea of just watching her daily grind, she saw that when they took samples, put it in a FedEx box to zoom off to the lab. Well, that made sense because they needed immediate results. But then those sampling boxes would be sent back to the office via similar route, via FedEx. And that could have gone regular mail, and it would have cost a lot less money. She put that idea forward. It was one of the top vote-getters. We implemented it right away. Now it didn't save a billion or a trillion, the kind of dollars that we're talking about in the aggregate here in Washington, but it saved $100,000. How many employees have an idea like that? I think a lot of them. And I think everyone's rolling up their sleeves right now, pitching in. So we have certainly been watching what's going on, understanding where this is all going. And last year, I got very involved in understanding the VERA and VSIP authorities that the federal government has through the Office of Personnel Management. And I'm sure most people listening understand what those are. VERA is your early out. VSIP is an incented buyout for people who are already retirement eligible. My first meeting with Secretary Vilsack before President Obama won the election, but we were feeling pretty confident. I shared with him the retirement data for USDA, which is no different from the rest of the federal government. It was OPM data I'd collected and analyzed for particularly for USDA, but it showed that in the Obama administration, the first 4-5 years, 50% of USDA's employees would become retirement eligible. And before the economic downturn, OPM's projection was half of them would take that retirement. Well, of course, now with the market as it is, people are very hesitant. But still, as we go into dark budget times, my greatest desire is to avoid a reduction in force RIF, because I have read those rules. They give no flexibility, and nobody feels confident and secure in their job. And I'm just worried that we get in that situation, it really demotivates the whole enterprise and makes it very difficult to get work done. So I've been very aggressive on the VERA and VSIP authorities. We had a USDA-wide VERA offering in this fiscal year. Our paperwork that went to OPM projected somewhere around 300 people would take advantage of that. We've had over 1,000 applications so far. We have offered VSIP in 4 agencies, 3 because of elimination of earmarks in the FY11 appropriations bill, 1 agency because of some reorganization they were doing. The decisions are still being made there, not perhaps as much uptake as I would like, but going into the next fiscal year, I want to have a USDA package through OPM, through OMB, so we're ready to make those offerings as soon as the new fiscal year begins, because people need to take advantage of those opportunities early in the fiscal year if it's going to have any budget savings in the long run.
The GPRA Modernization Act of 2010 codifies the statute, the role of the federal department's chief operating officer, which is primarily, as I understand it, at the deputy secretary level. Would you tell us about that role and how the act has changed the way you folks manage and operate?
I don't think it's changed us at all, and I can't speak for other departments, but historically at USDA, with the deputy being the person overseeing the budget, there has been a lot of that day-to-day chief operating officer role. I have a boss, Tom Vilsack, who's a very hands-on manager. So maybe I'm a little less so than other deputies, actually. I consider myself a hybrid. I also go out on the road quite a bit, dealing with our field staff and various constituent groups around the country. So we are deputy and secretary. We share some roles, actually. But I think there is a new expectation at the White House after passing this act that we'll be going in for quarterly reporting on a number of things like high-performance priority goals. So it's really, I think, for my vantage point, USDA, more of a way that they're going to be holding our feet to the fire on management reforms. But internally, how we work at USDA, probably not a lot of difference at all.
So the next reauthorization of the Farm Bill is, I think it's set for 2012. There's been movement and discussion trying to shape possible content. Would you highlight some of those key areas and topics that may be in the next Farm Bill?
It's a crazy, crazy Farm Bill season. I've never seen anything like it because you have the debt ceiling effort. You've got, you know, we're at the cusp of finishing an FY12 bill in agriculture, I believe. We're supposed to have our FY13 paperwork into OMB in September. And then you throw a farm bill in the mix. Wow, it is overwhelming. And we don't have a sense of what that farm bill shape would be. Normally at this time of the season, in farm bill season, that is, I think of farm bill seasons, you would have marker bills out there. You would have a sense of how certain titles would be shaping up. Because of so much uncertainty in the budget scene, we don't have that this year. The secretary has gone out and he has put 2 stakes in the ground. One, he says, we need to have an expanded notion of this farm safety net. It's not just about our disaster programs, our conservation programs, even our crop insurance programs. It's about investing in rural America and making rural America a place where people want to raise families, where they want to farm, where they want to be. That is his vision, and we'll be talking a lot about rural development when we get into that farm bill debate. The second area he's talked about, and I feel as strongly about this as anything, is the need to increase the tools in our toolbox to bring in beginning farmers. As in an earlier segment, I talked about farmers, average age 57, 30%, 65 years of age and older. We need to bring in a new crop, if you will, of farmers and ranchers around the countryside. And the capital costs of being in American agriculture are huge. Right now, prime farmland in Iowa is about $6,000 an acre. In Hawaii, you know, millions of dollars for the right acre. I mean, it is just crazy. A combine, probably $250,000. The average farmer in America has nearly $1 million in assets, and that's just basically to do the really minimal work that requires American agriculture. So a young person coming in, particularly a young person who doesn't have a farm in the family, how do you do that? So at the same time, I've got this fervor, this excitement about American agriculture, young people, especially because of the local regional food scene, really interested again, wanting to reconnect, wanting to get their hands in the soil, saying maybe a career in agriculture is for me. At the same time, I've got this incredibly capital-intensive enterprise, and I don't know how to crosswalk them in. So we'll be talking about that as we approach the Farm Bill.
What does the future hold for the U.S. Department of Agriculture? We will ask Kathleen Merrigan, Deputy Secretary at USDA, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.